Thank you for your study. A couple of things. I'm not sure, maybe I misunderstood, which isn't uncommon for me, but I don't believe we can keep an Old Testament vow lawfully where you, the chart where you had the 55 mile an hour, you said you can keep this, you can keep this, but we can't keep a Nazarite vow.
No, what I meant was people can if they choose to. They can keep the vow if they want to. No, not lawfully according to God, no. Okay. No, I didn't mean that. I mean, if they want, but like today, they can cut their hair as women if they want to. We can't stop them. They can try to keep the vow if they want. But
okay.
I want to be clear on that. No, okay. You're right.
Another thought here. Now, a beard is not, when it talks about, you know, letting the hair grow on the head, that's a beard is not under consideration. Otherwise, in the New Testament, when it's a shame for a man to have long hair, brethren that have beards would be violating that. And the word doesn't have reference to facial hair at all. It has reference to hair that's growing on the scalp. So, now, first of all, I want us to understand that I think we're all in agreement. Women should not cut their hair. But I do have a question. When we talk about the Nazarite vow, we always talk about the men, but a woman could keep a Nazarite vow. And so in the New Testament, Paul makes the statement, you know, that nature, you know, teaches that women should, you know, let their hair grow long, that should. And so were Jewish women then always letting their hair grow without cutting it unless they took a vow?
As far as I can see anywhere, there's no indication otherwise that they would cut it on a regular basis, just in daily life, no. Now, you know, there were certain women who would have cut hair, as Paul mentioned, you know, that some of them were shorn or shaven because of certain lifestyles, but the Jewish woman traditionally did not cut. They were letting it grow.
Okay. Is there anything that you read, you know, that would be in Jewish literature that would indicate that?
I did not.
Okay. Thank you. Roger.
In Acts 18 and 18, I just wondered if you had thought about that, do you have any indication that when Paul still remained a good while, he took leave of the brethren, sailed for Syria, and Priscilla and Aquila were with him. He had his hair cut off at Cenchrea, for he had taken a vow. Do you think that has any relation to a Nazarite situation?
Some people argued that it did, and some people argued that it didn't. My best guesstimate on that is that Paul had been under a vow for some time, week, month, whatever time, but there's no indication as to why. There's just not any indication as to why. I don't know that anybody has an answer for why he did that or what the vow was, but my guess is it would have been some form of this vow. Now, why that was acceptable, I don't know. If it was acceptable, and if that's what it was. So I'm not trying to avoid the issue, but I, you know, reading that verse, it doesn't specifically tell us that's what the vow was, but that's every indication I would get. But I can't find a reasoning for it.
I doubt that vow that just got referenced there in Acts 18 was the Nazarite vow, because how could Paul eat the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week if he couldn't? If you took that Nazarite vow, you're not allowed to drink anything from the grapevine. Nothing.
I agree. That's what I mean. I don't know what the vow was.
So it had to be something less than the Nazarite vow.
It may have been some decision that he had just made, kind of like fasting. Today people can fast for whatever reason they want. It may not be anything ordained or commanded by Scripture, but they can fast if they want. Maybe Paul just made some self, you know, like people make a New Year's resolution. Maybe he made some decision not to for a while. I don't know why, but I don't know why he would do that. I don't have any idea. Unless it was to focus on the Lord for a while, like people do in fasting. But I agree. That's why I said I can't say it is a Nazarite vow, because I can't see Paul keeping that vow.
I have a question that may pursue some, since we're waiting. Is there any implication at all that the Nazarite vow could be done by a woman in the Old Testament? Was it ever done by a woman? Did it include women at all? It would seem that it, you know, if
it said a man or woman could, but there's no indication that one woman ever did.
Okay. But it said men or women could.
Yes. If a man or woman wants to vow a vow, they can.
Okay.
But there's no record of any woman ever making a vow.
Yeah. If the pattern was followed, then at the end of the vow, she would cut it off and offer it to the priests, right?
That's what the vow says. But there's no record that one ever did.
Yeah, there's nothing in the Bible, but there are Jewish writings that talk about women that took vows. When Agrippa and Bernice are mentioned in Josephus, it mentions that she was under a vow and had shaved her head. So there are Jewish writings that talk about women who had taken a Nazarite vow.
There was when the Jewish men took captives and they had a woman that they wanted to marry out of a bunch of the captives, they gave law for them, and they would shave their heads, cut their nails, and wait 30 days for their grief, for their family, what have you, and then they could marry them. You know, that was a traumatic thing. If the natural law was for a woman to grow hair and it's natural for her, then this traumatic thing really showed something. He'd leave her alone. Well, 30 days while her hair's cut off, all that's changed. And maybe when she took a vow, it was a very traumatic thing too. Maybe we think the vow is not as serious as God thinks it is.
Well, there's no argument that people don't take vows seriously. You're right. A vow was a very stringent promise that in that society, normally you did not break a vow. But our society doesn't value a vow of any kind anymore. But you're right. It was more than likely any vow, even of a non-godly person in those days, if they made a promise or a vow, their society was very strict about keeping it.
Well, we've got 20 more minutes. I can wait. Just since we're filling up time, Glenn. In previous years, when we've had studies on 1 Corinthians 11, we sometimes go back here to number 6, showing that the Greek word that is used there for a woman to have long hair, which is a verb, is used in the Septuagint in number 6, referring to the Nazarite. Everybody understands from what's said about the Nazarite that he was not to cut his hair. That's the same word that's used in 1 Corinthians 11 for sisters in the church. And so as long as a sister in the church is keeping her commitment to God, she's not going to be cutting her hair if she's truly keeping her commitment to God, just like if the Nazarite was truly keeping his commitment to God, or hers, as it would be. So we can use this passage in number 6 to show the use of language and what the words mean.
I agree wholeheartedly, Rich. And one of the things that I didn't focus on this lesson, just for observation's sake and my own, one of the things that bothers me about this First Corinthians teaching is I think sometimes we find ourselves, unfortunately, arguing too much about the semantics rather than the commitment. If we were totally devoted to whatever God told us to do, as the Nazarite had to be, if we were totally committed, then if God told us to stand on our head, we would. We wouldn't ask why. You know, like our parents used to try to teach us. And our sisters and our brothers in the church, we wouldn't be arguing over how long is long and how short is short. If we were a man committed, we would make sure we kept it short enough. If we were a woman, we would leave it alone. And we wouldn't have to try to instill upon our sisters this deep-found understanding of vocabulary. When they read to let the hair grow, they would leave it alone. And I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that it's all about commitment. It's not just about, you know, following the commands mechanically. It's about following them from here first. And I think you're right. It is something we can teach the world, new converts, but it's a shame that we have to keep teaching this to our own people, men and women, because they don't want to keep it. And I think that's what the Nazarite had to prove, was that they had to go to extremes. Their life was interrupted. It was a living sacrifice every day, a difficult battle. Because imagine in those days, if your own child died, you couldn't touch them. Now, I don't want that to happen to any of us. And I've never wanted to touch a dead body in my life. But this was an extreme sacrifice in a great number of ways. They had to be totally committed. And I think that's part of the teaching on 1 Corinthians we miss, is we need that commitment totally to whatever you say, Lord, I'll do it. And then we'll follow whichever teaching it is.
Boyd?
I agree wholeheartedly what you just said. There is, of course, a challenge we have in our day and time that they would not have had in the first century. And that's a language difference.
Oh, yes.
So some things are lost in translation. But again, since we're filling time, I thought of what Thomas Shaw wrote in his little First Corinthians commentary that's always stuck with me, and it's just made this whole, as you call it, somatical, you know, word meaning, whole area, just a whole lot simpler. And regardless of how we understand, or regardless of what we want to say about the meaning of the word translated "let the hair grow," or the word for shave or shorn, the reality is there's three lengths of hair mentioned here for the woman. One is shaven, one is shorn. If you know, shaven and shorn means one cut a little bit, one cut all the way off. Those are set in contrast to let the hair grow. So whatever let the hair grow means, it cannot mean shave or shorn, cut a little bit or cut all the way off, because it's set in contrast to it. And for that, that just simplifies the whole process of trying to explain this to somebody.
And something else I didn't mention, it's in my notes but not in my PowerPoint, I was going to mention, I forgot to, I'm sorry. There was no punishment built in for not keeping the vow. The Old Testament Nazarite vow, there was no punishment built in there. It's just you break a vow. But we know by reading Old Testament scripture what the punishment for not keeping a word with God is. But there is simply the following of the vow. Samson was punished greatly. Samson broke his vow in a great number of ways, too.
I just want to make an observation. In number 6:12, it points out that if the Nazarite was standing by a man that died and he ends up touching this man, then it says specifically all his days previous to the vow have been lost. So if he'd made a year commitment, he makes it 364 days and touches a dead body, he's got to start over again. And the point is, in 1 Corinthians 11, if a woman cuts her hair, what's she supposed to do? She's supposed to do what she was supposed to do from the beginning, just as the Nazarite was.
That's a very good point. And we've had that discussion with many sisters in the church. You know, if I cut my hair, what do I do now? Because it's not long anymore. From what I understand, if you make a confession of that, prayer and forgiveness, and begin again, your hair is restored to long because you're no longer inhibiting it, no longer bothering it. That's a good point. I didn't make that connection. That's a good point. Because you have to start over. But you do have the freedom to start over.
Jonathan?
I'd like to attach this topic to the couple that we spoke on yesterday about homosexuality, if it's possible. In 1 Corinthians 11, when it talks about it being against nature, the same Greek word is used in Romans chapter 1 when it talks about people doing things against nature. And one of the reasons, albeit a very secondary one, why we should always say that 1 Corinthians 11 is universal and not only for the Corinthians, it's for all of us, is because people who are homosexual but advocate that they can be a Christian will use that word and they say, well, when you all say that Romans 1 is universal and it's against nature, then you have to apply 1 Corinthians 11 to that too. And what denominational people do is they get scared because they don't want to follow 1 Corinthians 11. And so then they're in a pickle because they've used Romans 1 to say you can't be homosexual because that goes against nature. Mm-hmm. Well, the homosexual advocates will fire back. And so anyway, that's just another, albeit secondary, reason why we can say, well, no, we do think it's universal. Women don't cut their hair today just like they weren't supposed to back then. And homosexuality still is against nature today.
Inconsistencies are very difficult to defend. Any parent knows that. But you're right. If you say against nature stands here but doesn't stand here, then your entire religious belief falls apart because you're inconsistent. And that's right.
Any other question or comment? Nathan.
I was just going to make one thing real quick while we had time. A person didn't have to take this vow upon themselves. Apparently, when Samson's placed under it by his mother, and so he didn't have a say in this, he's just born under this vow. And so the idea of it's his hair, he can do with it whatever he wants to, wasn't a valid argument for him. It was placed on him by his parents. And the same way, we're born under the law when we're born again as Christians, and we don't have a say about the law that we have to keep. We're just born in it.
In fact, the two people that most often are associated with being Nazarites, Samson for one and Samuel, if he in fact was a full Nazarite, were both placed under before they were born. And their entire life, that decision was not theirs to make. And that's a good point. As a Christian, when we are born into Christ, those decisions are no longer ours to make. Now, we willingly choose to follow it. Samson broke his. He had the opportunity and the freedom to break it. You know, that free moral agent. But it is not legally ours to break, and that's a very good point. I did think it was interesting, though, that Samson's mother was also asked to begin to make sure she was as pure as possible even before she became pregnant with her child. And I thought that was interesting. She's not under the entire vow that I know of, but she was at least under part of it to make preparation for this child to come. And that was interesting to me.
Ryland.
While you're comparing the two, Nazarite vow, you know, Samson didn't know the Lord had gone from him when his hair had been cut off. You know, all the women that would say, I'm going to cut my hair. Now, I'm still spiritual.
You know, I've had the discussion. If I understand Scripture correctly, and I'm certainly not perfect in that, but when a sister cuts her hair, her prayer channel was cut off. She's no longer in good standing, if I'm correct. And the number of mothers who pray a vain prayer for their children, or their husbands, or their brothers, or their wives, you know, whoever, to pray for people is extremely important to me. For my brethren to pray for me is extremely important. And to take that avenue out of your own hands, to cut yourself off from God as a mother, as a sister in the church, absolutely makes no sense to me. And sometimes, as you say, I think a lot of them don't know that.